Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
What is going on with this world, I guess, is the question. There is essentially a culture war that has stemmed out of the Lindsay Clancy trial. I didn't expect this. Honest to God, I thought this was going to be kind of a passing trial, not a ton of attention, but some of, you know, from folks who are in the true crime community. Wow, was I wrong. Lindsay Clancy's defense told the jury she killed three children. The prosecution agrees. Both sides, same fact. However, thousands of people on the internet had decided prosecution's wrong and the defense is wrong. They know better. It's something nobody sees. Nobody. They're just inventing shit. And a lot of people are believing it. How did we get here? Why are we here? That's what this episode is about. We're going to dive into this in three different chapters as we discuss the Lindsay Clancy situation. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is with us, as well as Robin Dreek, as always, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Let's start. Both the prosecution and the defense agree. Lindsay is the one who did this. Her own attorney conceded this at the opening. Siobhan, how does someone watch this and decide that's a lie?
You know, this is an intensely disturbing case, right? Children dead, killed by mother. Mother admits it. This hits everybody, I think, in that amygdala, that emotional part of the brain. Mm-hmm. And people want a monster because we like these nice, simple narratives, you know, with the good guys and the bad guys. And this is not a case where you have a monster.
Yeah.
If you think critically and you analyze the facts, which I think are in front of us, the mental illness piece, it's not disputable. But people aren't thinking critically, and they're in their amygdala. They're not in their thinking brain. They're incapable of, you know, analyzing what has been proven here and what is false. And it's become this almost cult-like war, these teams. And I mean, I know there are people like us who are looking at the evidence and trying to put things together and taking notes and being careful in how we give opinions. But this amygdala-driven rage where people are projecting their own histories onto, you know, I do see that there's this trend now, particularly on X, and which I don't really follow, but it's been pointed out to me a lot, where men are going after Lindsay as the monster that they want to see tortured and killed. They don't understand mental illness. And a lot of women now are going after Patrick, that Patrick is this evil, malevolent monster that drove Lindsay crazy and somehow managed to kill everybody and throw her out the window, you know, and it's crazy. It's crazy. But in truth, both sides are exactly alike in the process of what they're doing. And when you ascribe malevolence to a monster, anybody that doesn't support that side, they become a monster too.
Yeah.
And so it's not just we have a difference of opinion, it's you're evil too. Mm-hmm. And so while the case testimony, of course it's emotional, of course it's disturbing, we feel upset about it, but what has been really even more disturbing to me is watching this war go on where people are saying such incredibly vicious things about Lindsay and about Patrick. And in truth, this is a case, there is no monster. It's mm-hmm. like Lindsay's brain was broken. copious amounts of evidence about that. It's not in dispute if you understand anything about mental illness or psychology, which shouldn't be that hard to do a bit of reading and understand it. And we talk about it all the time, as other podcasters are talking about it, but people don't care and they're not listening to the evidence. So I don't see Lindsay as a monster. Her brain is broken. She did a monstrous thing. She acknowledges it. She wants to be dead because she regrets it so much. Patrick, I think, did his best. I'm giving my whole diatribe here, but you know, families do not know how to manage mental illness. And I've seen that kind of severe mental illness. They're not equipped. They don't know what to do. And to then turn Patrick into the monster because, oh, he wasn't supportive. I mean, we heard from her mother. Her family was supportive. Patrick was supportive. But the big flaw here was the incredible lapse in the treatment providers. And that's well documented. And yes, I was telling Robin earlier, I definitely, you know, got my 26 legal pads full of data now. This could easily be another book if I wanted to punish myself by writing a book, which books are not fun to write. So I don't know that I'll go there, but I'll be putting more on Substack because that's kind
of... Yeah, I love your pieces on Substack. And Siobhan, Tony and I talked at length about some of the causes and reasons behind the emotional breaks, the amygdala hijacking that's going on in society. And some of it, like, you know, from evolution of our species, you know, we are very good for our survival. We have to make quick judgments, quick assessments, and react quickly for our safety to preserve life. And so you can see snap judgments coming in. But you would think over the evolution of our species, those kind of snap judgments without critical thinking would have been flushed out because that's when stupid happens. That's why I was drawing comparisons for everyone this morning. That this parallels, you know, I mean, just think about this. Years and years ago, if Lindsay had done this, she wouldn't be on trial and psychosis wouldn't be being argued. She'd be being exercised for the evil demons that were possessed her body because when we don't understand something, we make up stories and make up fables. And since no one understands this, they're making up all these amazing stories, you know, just like they don't understand thunder and lightning, so we're going to invent the god Thor. You know, all these things is exactly what we do. What's preventing people from taking a breath and taking in more data and information? It just doesn't make sense to me where people will lock on so rapidly and not let go. It's like a bulldog bites down and they absolutely refuse to let go of these crazy, non-cognitive, non-thoughtful, non-critical thinking opinions. And again, critical thinking, interrogate your opinions, interrogate someone else's opinions. That's it. That's it. Just interrogate it. Just question it. What prevents people from doing that? You would think as an evolutionary evolved species, we would do that, but we're not.
Yeah, you know, when we talk evolution, it's tricky because I don't think we've all evolved to the same degree.
And different paces for different people, it seems.
We locked the nutters up in a cave and let them live.
Yeah, you know, what I see going on, there's a lot of projection. And so one of the things that is happening, at least for some of the folks, is that Lindsay becomes every woman that's ever done me wrong, every manipulative woman, every dangerous woman. And now here's a place to target all my emotional baggage. And so it feels good to vent this rage. You know, people can get addicted to venting rage, which is super unhealthy. But I think that's what we're seeing. And then for not every woman, but the people who are involved in this tribalism, every abusive, narcissistic, unkind man that I've ever been involved with, here's my chance to vent the rage at Patrick. So it's this affectively, this emotionally driven process, which is so intense for people. And then they get online and they reinforce each other, and they you know, go into the tribal identity. And it really is almost cult-like. It's like we identify with our tribe now. So don't confuse us with the evidence, because they're just not interested.
Do you see it as an indictment against the mental health of our nation as whole that you're unaware of? I mean, I'm seeing every now and then you see a red flag here and a red flag there with someone who's a little deviation, you know, from the norm. But as I said yesterday, is it more than I was ever expecting? Because if they're treating this case this way and people in their lives like this, they're most likely treating a lot of other people in their life the same way, where they're jumping to rapid conclusions, causing a lot of drama, causing a lot of hate and discontent in their lives. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I definitely see that. And I don't know that if our country is any worse than any other country, because I think it's just probably a flaw of the human thinking process, the motivated reasoning, right? Where you have a strong opinion and then you interpret everything through the lens of that emotional opinion. You know, you're just not capable of thinking critically about it. But it's incredibly toxic. And as I say, watching all the evidence is disturbing, but watching this stuff is what makes my heart pound. And it also reminds me of QAnon, you know, when the crazy stuff going on.
I forgot about that. I wonder how many people are going off the rails here on this case and inventing things and going down these conspiracy routes are also the same folks who were involved in QAnon beliefs.
Would not surprise me.
Correlation or some
other. It doesn't take much.
I'm going to say there might be a string to cross on the evidence wall between those two. I want to talk for a moment about this, the projection that so many people seem to be doing here. And I get it in many cases. I get people looking at some of these characters we talk about, particularly when we're talking about like a narcissist, a borderline, a real toxic human being like Corey Richens, for example.
She's such an easy example.
Or, I mean, Lori Vallow, she's just nuts. But there's tons of horrible, narcissistic, monstrous women that we've talked about on this show, and men. I get like, you know, almost excited to talk about them because I have personal experience with borderline personality. And yes, it's therapeutic to be like, wow, let me just unleash all this on you. But this is not that. She's not this woman that's this horrific, crazy. She doesn't have a track record of anything.
No.
There's no like months leading up to this of her trying to poison the husband or the children or a thousand other narcissistic crazy shit like Corey Richens had, where like the evidence is there. Yes, that is that monster. And same with Patrick. There's no evidence that he's this like selfish, narcissistic husband. People are jumping on this fact that the mother was there. She had actually, the grandparents were at the house helping take care of the kids. He went on a business trip to New York one time. Holy shit, he must be cheating on her with some mistress. And there's no evidence to that. And then they go to, well, he was married 4 months later. No, he wasn't. You're making that part up too. It was 3 years later, you idiots. Yeah. But the thing is, the facts come in, they absorb them, and then they become truth. And even if the facts then are presented as not truth, you're wrong. This is misinterpretation. This is just you taking facts from someone who's not giving you facts, but you already landed in those being real. And so they still sit there and they just keep repeating shit that they know is factually wrong. I don't understand. I guess I got kind of a tangent there. What my point is, I don't understand people projecting their shit onto these characters because they don't match the characters that people are trying to project their shit onto that one would think would be those people. There's plenty of people to do that with. These are not them. Why are people doing that?
Yeah. It's this non-rational part of humanity, you know, and I think we can look at everybody, including us at times when we're emotionally driven and not rational. But most people, I think healthier people, can take a breath, step back, and say, okay, why am I so upset here? Let me analyze this. Let me calm down and get my thinking brain in. But humans, You know, a lot of them, they're just not very good at using that thinking brain, and the evidence doesn't matter. Somebody wrote something on Facebook the other day that was very easily disproved and was factually incorrect. And I said, okay, take a breath, be calm, just speak in and correct and say, no, here's the fact. I could not believe the reaction just from that one person, but clearly enraged at me, because then not only is Lindsay, I mean, pure evil, if you try to say, but here's a fact, you become the enemy and you're purely evil too, which is crazy.
I want to just point out, somebody made a comment there and they were trying to connect the dots here on why people went to the, because people say, well, he's dating 4 months later. Again, that's pure internet conjecture. There's no fact that says that anywhere. And let me throw this into the ether. And let me also address this quickly. People who jump with the words, no one can, ... Wrong. Mm-hmm. You're just wrong. Mm-hmm. No one can get a divorce that quickly. I've gotten divorced in a month. I've gotten divorced within a few months. I've done it twice, fast. It can be done. It's not an impossibility. So when people throw this shit, no one can do that. You're just fucking wrong. Mm-hmm. No, they can. They can easily. But that's not what we're even talking about. And let me riddle me this. The man's been through hell. The man's family was annihilated. His wife did this. He's trying to figure out what to do going forward. Yep. Heaven forbid the man finds a member of the opposite sex that he's attracted to and a relationship forms and they become close and it becomes romantic. Heaven forbid he have someone in his life to help him navigate that shit show, because Julie in Ohio is mad that she got rejected on Tinder the other day. She's going to go, well, he shouldn't have that happiness because I don't. That's essentially what I feel is happening here. The man who went through hell found happiness at some point 3 years later, by the way, for the actual marriage, and the world thinks, well, that's too quick for me. What the fuck is that?
That's self-radicalization.
Yeah, it's crazy, because when a person has been wounded to the degree that this man was wounded, which, you know, I don't know that any of us can imagine how awful that wounding would be. I mean, to lose your entire family in such a horrendous way. And of course, he's going to have self-blame. And of course, this is going to be the worst thing he ever lives through in his life.
Yeah.
We all, when we go through a trauma, we need comfort. We need people who are going to help soothe our nervous system. And even if he met somebody 3 to 4 months later who was comforting, who was soothing, maybe started as a friendship, developed into love. I say that's a beautiful thing. That's a
gift.
It's certainly what I did 6 months after, back in 2004, when my husband did the horrendous suicide.
Yeah.
I was broken. And I met my current husband, who was so kind. And
yes,
so
he is.
Soothing.
We all met him. He is a soothing, you know, it's so funny you brought that up. Not funny, but just unique, because we all met your husband at Tony's wedding. And I got my goosebumps going, because he is a soothing soul. I mean, just being around, he literally, the way he moves, the way he interacts, you can see what the magnetism there was. It was a soothing soul, because he's just one of those people in life that gives comfort just by presence.
Comfort.
So time periods don't matter. It's what you need in those moments.
Yeah.
Is that a big projection on a lot of people, just their own unhappiness with their own partner, and how dare he find happiness? I don't even get why anybody's mad at him for finding happiness after this. I mean, and then people saying, well, he could have done more. I'm sure there's 1,000 things he wishes he would have done differently.
Can you imagine?
But you know what? You be in that situation and tell me how you would have acted better. You know, it's just, I don't know. It seems it's very deeply rooted in a lot of people, this unhappiness that I feel a lot of people really have. And I guess maybe that's what's surprising about this, is just how deeply, viscerally this is affecting so many people in very weird ways.
Yes. Very sad. Is what it is. It's tragically sad. You know, every time I see someone reacting and saying some really batshit crazy stuff, you know, I don't get angry. like everyone else, not everyone, but these pockets of these self-radicalization people, because from all the cases that we've covered, Tony, you know, like assassination attempts, you know, like the Charlie Kirk assassination attempt, that guy was self-radicalized because he had these thoughts. He projected these thoughts. Groupthink started, and they start escalating like this with the anger, the rage, and finally lack of problem-solving skills. I'm going to do it. You know, yeah. And that's how self-radicalization happens. These echo chambers of crazy just go. But being able to really think through it, talk through it, if everyone just got a little bit more curiosity going, mm-hmm. if you hear something that sounds like you either super agree with or even if you're super against, let's interrogate that information. Let's take a deeper look at that. What's that based upon? You know, every time I have an emotional response to everything, you know, one thing I started doing in the FBI, I found that if I got an emotional response to something, hey, here's a great experiment. It's time for a science experiment. Let's see what I observed that gave me that emotional response. And let's start interrogating whether it's based on fact, data, or my own emotional hijacking. What's my understanding of myself? There's so many questions you can start asking before you start jumping to conclusions. Mm-hmm. So just get curious. Gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your thoughts in the comment section as we continue our conversation about Lindsay Clancy. The links are in the description. We'd love for you to continue the conversation there. The fight over the Lindsay Clancy case has seemingly split along a lot of gender lines in a way that's hard to explain and really impossible to ignore. On X, men want Lindsay destroyed. On Threads and Instagram, women have decided Patrick is a monster who drove his wife insane on purpose. Siobhan Scott is with us to help us break all of this down as to what the hell is going on here. You had mentioned gender lines earlier in the week when we were talking on email. I've certainly seen it. How gender split do you think this is, Siobhan, in terms of people's reactions? Because honestly, I've seen it. I don't know. I've seen a pretty even mix of hating her or hating him from both men and women. But maybe that's just the perspective of what I've been catching.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly have seen a lot of the live court shows. You know, mm-hmm. I watch the feed over on the side. And there are a lot of women who are going after Lindsay as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, you know, cannot imagine that they would ever kill their children. And mm-hmm. so there's just that lack of insight into what psychosis is. Because in truth, if any of us became psychotic, we could do horrendous things. Mm-hmm. And people don't want to imagine that because that's just beyond their comprehension to understand. But there is this split where I see more women, particularly on Threads. Oh my gosh, it just makes me sick. And I don't even follow it often, but every once in a while somebody will point, oh, you've got to look at this thread. And I go, okay. And I look and then I'm just like, oh my God, I'm sick from it. I think it really is this, I have been wounded by a narcissistic man. Mm-hmm. And this is my funnel. This is where I'm going to channel that rage. You know, I'm taking my story and putting it onto this story. And then there's, you know, on X, again, which I don't follow, but other people point things out to me. And it's just amazing the misogyny. And I think it's the hatred toward women.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, the violence that they talk about. I see that more with men wanting her tortured. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of the way the incels talk about how they want women tortured. I mean, there's a sadistic quality to it. So it's psychologically really disturbing to read these things.
Is there an element here to this? The society has a lovely way of looking at families and people and situations, especially celebrities. And these are obviously not celebrities, but they were a family that on the outside looking in, you know, seemed to be, you know, they had their issues as anyone does. This is the third time she was going through postpartum and went into psychosis on this one. But three kids, you know, seemingly, you know, nice looking family, fair, you know, successful, living a life. Everything seemed to be good. Is there an element to this where it's like that with celebrities? When something goes wrong, people are really quick to like, yeah, tear them down. Mm-hmm. Are they looking at this of like, this was a pretty decent family and then this went wrong? And it's just like, destroy that. They do, you know, because of people's own unhappiness, because of people's own bad choices and their own plights in life where things didn't work out, that I want to tear this one down too. Again, because despite the evidence, there isn't evidence of Patrick being this narcissistic monster. Yeah. Like, people can find a few things where maybe he dropped the ball. Sure. So does everyone. So did she. So did, like, it's fucking human beings. But there's not a pattern of narcissistic behavior in him. Why? Why are people doing that? I mean, is that why it is? It was a happy, successful marriage and it went wrong. So it started to blaze. Now let's pour some gas on it.
Yeah, I think that's a good supposition. Again, people who are driven by their own emotions that they're not aware of, right? Because a lot of this emotional stuff is unconscious. And there's this sense of the rage and the pleasure with, you know, gee, there's something I don't have. And look at this, they don't have it either. And people, you know, people blend all this stuff together and you just get the kind of crazy things that we're seeing.
Go ahead, Tony. If Patrick were a narcissist, if he were this monstrous person that they're making out him to be, do you think he'd be sitting in that courtroom standing up for her? Do you think he'd be, or would he be on the defense and the prosecution side going, yeah, crazy bitch, horrible to the kids, did all that and looking like the hero?
Yeah.
Narcissists are grandiose. They want to be the hero in this situation. This does not make him the hero in this situation. And he's taking it on the jaw as he goes and lives. That's not a narcissist.
No.
It's the exact opposite of one, quite honestly.
Yeah. He would have focused on his own actions.
Yes.
And the one thing I also wanted to, so Stacey said, we don't often see what happens behind closed doors. You're right. We don't see behind those closed doors, but here's what we do see. For over 22 years with the FBI, I saw behind closed doors because when I had investigations, I had what we're seeing in testimony here. You know, I saw text messages, I saw internet traffic, I saw secret place. And when you have that amount of time of seeing secret place behind closed doors, and then you can see behaviors that become congruent with over a period of time through a lot of reps, you then get really, really attuned to seeing the outward presentation of leakage and seeing if that presents what's going on behind closed doors. Now, it's never 100% conclusive, but you see that kind of leakage over periods of time. When we're talking cases like this, we're talking life arcs of everyone involved in his family. I can tell you, there's no massive grouping of secret place. Are there pockets of shame, of wrongdoing, of something you didn't want someone to see or something like that? Yes, like all human beings. Minor things like this. There is no major gap or wobble from any leakage from absolutely anyone involved in Lindsay's family. That's why, you know, the divide, I was looking for the divide, not on gender, Siobhan. I've been looking at it from background. And so predominantly clinicians, researchers, investigators, when it comes to the human condition, they're the ones that are siding on Lindsay. It's the just the facts, ma'am, side, like the law enforcement side, the hard profiling side, not behaviors, but just, you know, the criminal side. They're the ones that are going hard against her because they just see actions. They don't see what causes those actions. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm seeing the divide. And yeah, gender plays in as well. But again, you can't see exactly behind the closed doors, but I'll tell you what, leakage tells you a lot. Leakage. That's why we look at everyone in here.
Everybody that knew her, everybody that knew them as a couple, all the family members. Yeah, nobody is questioning that she was a wonderful mother and Patrick is a great guy. And yeah, there would be leakage.
Co-workers for 15 years describing what she's like in tears as she's giving birth as a labor and delivery nurse every single time because she said, I can't believe this miracle of life that just happened in front of me. That's what co-workers are saying about her. Yeah. And so these little things. And even now, I'm watching her co-worker from all these years, her other labor and delivery nurse, who said she's still in touch with Lindsay today. After all these horrendous things that she did do, she did all these horrendous things. I picked up as she's walking out of the courtroom, she looked at Lindsay and gave her a little nod. Mm-hmm. As she's walking out, like, I'm still with you. I'm still with you. Who would be if there's any sort of nefarious things going along, either with her or Patrick or anything else.
Yeah, very true.
I
don't
want to walk too long on it.
No, that's true. The other point I wanted to make, this whole thing that Patrick was a narcissist, if he did this, he would be a lot more than a narcissist. He would be a sadistic psychopath.
Yes.
Sadistic.
Fair point.
And there's certainly no evidence that man is a hidden sadist. I mean, it's
which makes it even crazier, because we're talking about someone who went into a state of psychosis, her. And yes, that's the thing. If you're gonna put all this on to Patrick, he'd be a madman. I mean, would be a Ted Bundy level character.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if this were who he is. I mean, what do you say to people like this? I mean, we got, you know, Sandra Lee here. Narcissists excel at concealing their ways. Yes, they do. Some do. Covert narcissists do. Some are extremely grandiose and are pretty fucking in your face too, by the way. It all depends on the type of narcissist you're dealing with. And I'm sorry, Sandra, that I'm sure you were burned and very hurt by a narcissist at some point in your life, but it's time to educate yourself on narcissism and the very different types of it that there are. And not every person that comes across your screen or your life is your ex. It's a healthy thing to learn that little factoid. It's not always easy to do. He did not stand up for her. He forgave her for killing his fucking kids. What do you mean he didn't stand up for her? I'm sorry, if you don't think he stood up for her, then you're not watching the same fucking case. Wrong. That will be a breadcrumb. Anyone to give the appearances they're caring people. So even though she's wrong and all that shit, it's breadcrumbs. It's this, it's that. There's always something that's leading them to believe that he's this other character that he's not. How do you, if this person comes into your office for a session and says, here's what I'm thinking.
Acting leaks over time. That's
how the hell do you, get through to that?
There's no acting. You can't act this much over time. We said it yesterday. No. Yeah, she would get 5 Oscars, you know, and him too. So if you're assessing, because this, again, we all have in this, you know, you, Siobhan, even more than me, I did it 22, you did it 35 and counting. The leakage of actors is so prevalent over time. So yes, people can put a mask on for a show for a short period of time.
For a short period of time. Yeah.
But unless you're a psychopath.
But psychopathy comes out and it manifests different ways as well.
Yeah.
Right. And that also comes out where there's unhealthy. So psychopathy can mirror and match a lot of people for periods of time for manipulation. But what happens is there's no real relationships. Things go sideways in those relationships. And so that's the leakage that comes out. People actually don't bond with. So just look at the psychopaths we've covered. Lori Daybell Vallo, Corey Richens, all these people, take their acts aside. Did anyone stand with them? No, they had no relationships with people to stand with them except a few other nutters in their cults. So that's why all the leakage that happens over periods of time says, no, there's no narcissism going on here. I'm sorry, Randy.
I think there's a lot of narcissism going on with the projection people out there, quite honestly, that they're not seeing past their own shit. Because really what we have here, I mean, you have one group, and if we're to look at the bigger pieces of the pie, you have a lot of men that are just skipping past the illness, a lot of women that are skipping past the act. Neither side is looking at the whole picture because the whole picture doesn't let them feel what they came to feel. And then you have people that are seem to be agreeing on this one, on the conspiracy camps. The fact that Patrick remarried in April of 2026, that fact then became proof of guilt for both sides. This is what they agree on. The men say, you know, a real father wouldn't move on. And the women say he clearly never loved her. Why does grief that doesn't look right to strangers automatically become evidence?
It just goes back to, I think, that confirmation bias. They've got an opinion, and then they're going to interpret every bit of information, every fact, to fit the emotional stand that they've taken. And so it absolutely doesn't matter. I saw one person on Threads saying, oh, but we know she didn't do it because she's pled not guilty. Okay. They don't understand how it works, right?
It's
she's already stipulated and acknowledged that she did it. You know, that's a fact. But the not guilty plea has to do with because of reason of insanity here. And people don't bother to even pay attention to basic facts because it's this cognitive distortion based upon their emotional response.
You know, the fact that, this is all playing out on screens and on text messages and message boards and comment sections, the way that it does now in our world. I mean, this is a relatively new concept. We didn't have a world like this 15 years ago, 20 years ago. We didn't really have it quite like this 10 years ago. I mean, it's ever evolving and ever changing. These sort of conversations, misinformed conversations, misguided understandings of cases used to just happened, you know, at the coffee shop or amongst friends on a phone call or whatever, in private small groups where everybody could, well, did you hear this? And men, women, whatever. I'm not making it a sex thing. But that's how those sort of things went. And I remember those days, and I remember many a times, if you get a whiff of some of those conversations, you're like, wow, they're not even understanding the reality of this. But it just keep leveling each other up on their emotional scale. That's where it used to live. Now it lives on forums. Now it lives in the comments section. I mean, is this really all that new? People being just so misinformed and misguided and misunderstanding over facts and then developing opinions? Because I don't think it is. It's just we now have a way to see behind the curtain in ways that we never have in the past.
And I think the amplification of the crazy theories, you know, people might have had an opinion before, yeah, talked about it at the coffee shop, but they didn't have 100 other people, you know, cheering them on, or 1,000 other people cheering, yeah, them on and saying, and here's more proof, and here's more proof, and here's more proof. So it just keeps that amygdala rage going all the time. And then they can stay up all night watching, mm-hmm, it. And I get the sense that some people are doing that. And that's where the rage addiction comes in. And they get increasingly non-rational.
Yeah, and then people get caught up in the cult of comparison. They do the one-upsmanship. So someone comes up with one crazy theory in what I think is a majority. We talk about living in our own context, you know, of it being a rainstorm. But right over here, there's pure sunshine. So you have, say you have a group of five people. Within that group of five people, and you're constantly going back and forth on X or any other social media platform, you all of a sudden feel like you're a majority because you get that echo chamber going. And then you start playing that game of one-upsmanship where you're trying to be a little bit better than Bob I just talked to, or a little bit better than Jane over here. So I got another crazy theory going. Oh, did you see him? He made a micro expression with an eyebrow raised during that testimony. Holy fuck, he's guilty. You know, and then they start putting it around and say, oh, wait, I saw that too. Did you see this? And blah, 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 blah. You know, so yeah, that cult of five turns into a cult of 10 and they get an echo chamber. The algorithms start taking hold of it and so it's, yeah, propagating it out as truth. That's, yeah, how this craziness happened. So yeah, Tony, to your point, I agree, it all has existed as a species. It hasn't just evolved, mm-hmm, in the last 10 years. It's just been given the platform of stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which allows us to further stupidity with those platforms.
Stupidize. And
it's two options. We can either be far more informed, and many of us are choosing to use it for that, to, oh, I don't understand this concept. Let me educate myself. I can do it like that now.
Yes.
I don't have to take a class. I don't have to talk to this person. I don't have to read a book. I can speak it aloud even now, mm-hmm, and the devices in my home will inform me of the facts to which I wish to learn. But we don't even do that. Mm-hmm. We go, well, what does Susie in Omaha think? I'm going to go with that.
I'll join that cult.
Her cat told me this. And look, and men are the same way. And to the asshole who said every dumb broad who defends Lindsay, just shut the fuck up. You are speaking just as stupid as what you're saying right now by expressing it that way. How tribalistic women can be. How fucking tribalistic are you being by calling women that dipshit? He can,
boy,
fuck
that,
off.
That's leakage, isn't it? That's
little
that
bad
attitude about women right there.
He,
yeah,
can fuck the right off. I mean, I'm not going to
watch it.
It's funny. People try to make points.
Tony's amygdala going.
People try to make their points by leaking out their shit at the same time. It's just like, shut the fuck up. Leave. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, unless you're going to say something like that, then you can fuck the right off. Let's. I'm sorry. This is how I roll here. The culture war over Lindsay Clancy isn't about Lindsay anymore, and isn't about Patrick. It's about what happens when millions of people encounter a crime that won't sort into the categories their brain needs. Siobhan Scott is with us, as well as Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, to help us continue this conversation. There's a lot of people that watch our show primarily, if we're to look at the biggest piece of the pie, roughly 70-80% of our audience demographically is women, age 35 to 64. They're smart. They follow cases closely. They care about justice. It's not me being chauvinistic. That's what our stats are. That's who watches this show statistically. A lot of them are, you know, very much in the comment sections right now. Some of them are very well informed. Some of them are not. Everybody's coming from different places. And many are convinced they're nothing like the conspiracy crowd, even when sometimes they are. I find myself falling into that from time to time. Where is the line between following a case, though, and being consumed by one? Because let's take a step back from the case itself. People getting so invested into this, into such a way where, you know, it almost becomes religion-like. And you're going to take things, I think when you start taking things on faith, if you will, of facts that you don't have the evidence to, but you're presenting as fact, that's essentially a faith move, where I'm just going to repeat this because I believe the tribe to which I'm coming from could not mislead me, could not take me down the wrong path. They're going to shepherd me over here. What's that line between following a case and taking it to this level of consumption and being consumed by one?
Yeah, I think we're watching that addictive rage process where people are given that opportunity to work out every bit of pain or anger or misogyny, as we saw here, that this becomes an avenue for where do they put their emotional garbage. And it just becomes something, I think, when people can't stop thinking about it, when they notice that they're going around tense and angry, rather than, you know, staying in their thinking brain and just being kind of analytical and say, what can I learn from this? Or I'm confused about it. You know, I want to watch a bit of it here so I can learn something. When they're watching it for hours and hours and hours, and particularly focused on it in the middle of the night, and feeling the need to attack people who are, you know, presenting evidence and have a difference of opinion, when it becomes so vituperative and hostile, they've crossed the line into something that's really unhealthy.
How do you self-recognize, Siobhan? I mean, because again, there's so many things I love about what we do on our show, you know, and it's as much self-help as it is analysis, I think, especially when we have you on, you know, and talking about this is probably the greatest case we've had where we've had so much mental illness going on, not just in the case itself, but all the surroundings of it. And it's hard to imagine because most, even the people that are self-radicalizing, I think in this, I'm going to call it self-radicalization because there's a lot of radical thoughts out there. I don't think people in general, if you are following that normal human behavior spectrum, want to feel this way. They want to stay up at night. They want to get over it. But if someone's even having that's tuning in, watching, and having a little bit of that own kind of glimmer of self-awareness, I was likening it to alcohol use disorder, or what they used to call alcoholism, and that is they start getting caught up in the cult of comparison because they're afraid they might have alcohol use disorder. So they're saying, well, I'm not as bad as that. How many drinks are you taking? Well, I'm only taking three. You're taking five. I must be okay. You know, and so.
And neither of us are on the corner with the paper bag under the bridge. We're not so that bad.
So I'm not as bad as that guy.
Yep.
So if someone's having a glimmer of, I might have a problem, and because they're doing that and they're asking that question themselves, or people in their lives are giving a poke, hey, man, you should turn off the TV. Maybe I'll turn this off. I mean, I'm sure all of us that are on the show get that from our spouses too. You know, as we're talking about this all freaking weekend long and doing texts early in the morning, not leakage on all of us, Tony, Todd. Yeah. But how do you start that self-heal? How do you move from the slight glimmer of recognition to, oh, shit, I got to really do something? And what's the first step they should take?
Well, yeah, I think for me, physically, am I getting a headache, right? Is my jaw clenched? Is my heart racing? I've noticed all those things this week because for these shows, we've got to watch a lot of the trial and then we see the comments coming in and it's disturbing. And so, you know, are you skipping meals, right? Are you getting some exercise? Are you eating healthy? People are so enraged and caught up in this and fighting online for hours and hours. What's your level of tension in your body? I think we all, you know, this sounds like a therapist talking, duh, right?
That's why we have you.
Yeah, you've got to pay attention to how am I feeling physically and is this interfering with my life? And if you notice that, yeah, take a break. Focus on something else. For me, I have a dog. I got to get out and walk that dog in the forest every day, which is super healing. If you have an option to do something that brings you joy, because every day I think we all need to experience, it doesn't have to be big things, but we need to experience something that's making us feel good, that's bringing us joy, rather than leaving us in this state of rage and anger.
Do you think, I thought of baselines when you're talking about that, because we all have a baseline before and after events and during events. Do you think it would be helpful for people, again, if this is accurate or not, you know, or people could actually take a few seconds and write down what their pattern was before this case started, what you did when you got up in the morning, what you did throughout the day, and write it down and then write down what you've been doing now. Mm-hmm. And then kind of have this awareness that, wow, my baseline has shifted. I need to recognize that. What do I need to do to get back to that baseline? And mm-hmm. hopefully that was a healthier baseline.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there is like this level of flailing going on with the crowd that likes to feel morally superior and righteous. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of people. I mean, I feel like there is an addiction, maybe that's the right word, maybe it's not, but there's an addiction that a lot of people have in this country because of social media to feeling morally superior over others. And they may do it over, you know, I make better stuffing at Thanksgiving. You know, it can be little things all around, you know, passive aggressive, covert things that really never add up to anything huge, but then they'll have their little opinions about things here and there. There's something about this case that's giving people that permission to feel fury, the moral superiority mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. purpose all at once. It feels righteous. It feels like justice is at work. It's 2 a.m. and they're still going. Is that addiction to the mirror, the moral superiority really playing itself out here? And we're seeing it flailing because there is no clear villain to be mad at here. And when people dig themselves into something and they're always, you know, posturing themselves as being right or better than others, when they dig in so much and there's, I don't know what lily pad to jump onto next. Mm-hmm. They don't have the answer. Ah! And it becomes a show. It's like they're mm-hmm. don't know what the fuck they're doing. Mm-hmm. Is that really what's going on way behind the curtains under everyone's engines who are just like, people are looking at going, are you okay? Are you okay right mm-hmm. now? Like what you're saying mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense. mm-hmm.
I think that's a really good point. It can be kind of a compulsive behavior. You can use the word addiction for it. You know, we have behavioral addictions where people get caught up in something. They get the dopamine rush. And when you have this position that the other side, right, which is a position we want to get away from anyway, but when you do that, the other side is evil, then you start to justify aggression mm-hmm. and it feels justified and aggression feels virtuous. And so you start to become, as we often see with religious cults, you're a holy warrior now and you're going to fight, you know, and anything to win and to punish the side that's wrong. That's,
because it's righteous. Because anything else, we don't want to fight. That's bad. That's evil. But when we put the words righteous in front of it, well, suddenly you're a holy warrior.
Yeah.
You know, and part of the, you said that great word, villainize, Tony, and people are villainizing Patrick. They're villainizing, obviously, Lindsay. How come, because the thoughtful people on here are saying the system failed. How come no one is villainizing the system? I don't. That's what everyone's pointing it out. I think both sides are agreeing, the prosecution and defense, that the system was not working the way it should. Either they didn't diagnose her right, or they diagnosed her right. I mean, it's either way. It's that's the system that seems to be at play here. How come, and Siobhan, how come people are not villainizing the system on this one, or the institution of mental health for women, as opposed to going after people?
Yeah, that's the thing that I think is really tragic here, because this case gives us an opportunity to look at the problems in treatment. And I've been saying, I used to supervise a lot of interns. If I were supervising interns right now, this would be the assignment. What can you learn from this case about doing diligent treatment and doing good treatment? And, you know, we've talked about that. You've got to exchange information with other providers. You've got to have longer visits with somebody who's troubled. You've got to keep people who are psychotic in the hospital longer. You've got to pay attention to what meds you're giving them, and are there negative reactions to the meds? You've got to work harder. And so that's, I think, where the focus should be. And we all need to understand what psychosis is, how to recognize it, and how to reach out for help. And this is stuff that's not well understood in the culture at all. So this is the opportunity to learn these important things and do better, you know, all around.
And you know, we talked beforehand, and I know people have brought up the comparison to the Andrea Yates case from years ago. And Siobhan, that's why you've covered that much more extensively than I did research the other day when Coffin Death brought it up. And the parallels between the two cases is staggering. It's staggering. And I remember what I read about the Andrea Yates case. People back then said this is a great case because it helped us focus more on the mental health issues women with postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis, and we're going to learn from this. Did we? It doesn't feel like it. Do you see any difference in how this has evolved in those cases? I mean, what's your impression of that?
Yeah, we didn't have everybody online back then, so I think we didn't see the polarization to the same degree. And I do think people that paid attention and followed it, there was a lot to learn, and I think people did learn. And hopefully, those are the folks. I remember following it really closely, and I learned a lot from following it closely. And, you know, that affected, I think every time I pay a lot of attention to these cases, because it's like, what can I learn as a clinician from this? But did it stick? And certainly younger people don't remember the case, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where, and, you know, there are a lot of cases that happen most of the time when mothers kill their children, it's because they're psychotic. Mm-hmm. And they don't all get in the press. This one got news because it was multiple children. This was a family that, as we've said, appeared to be a lovely middle-class family. And so that got more attention. But there are a lot of these cases that happen, and I pay attention to them. But I don't think most people are paying attention. And I think there's a population that are and hopefully are learning from it. But we're just seeing the loudest voices from the people that are in this cult-like rage state. They're the loud ones.
Riddle me this, because this is kind of an observation I'm making as we're talking. The crowd that really seems to be avoiding the reality of the mental health conversation here, and just not even going down that road, it's too icky, it's just she's evil, this, all of that. That group of people that is doing that, a lot of people, you know, when they're very viscerally opposed to something, sometimes, quite often, it's a reflection of themselves. It's a projection of themselves out there for whatever reason. This seems to be flying too close to the sun for them. So we're just going to pretend it's not even a thing. Does that make sense? that these are folks that maybe are a little more susceptible to be falling into a state of psychosis, mm-hmm. that these would be the ones that would be the most vocal to pretend that is an impossibility and does not exist in other human beings at the same time?
Mm-hmm. And it certainly, whether it's psychosis or not, it can be people who have some mental health symptoms, who have erratic moods, who get into a lot of conflicts in the world because of their own internal problems, and they don't want to acknowledge mental illness because it's too threatening. Often when I meet somebody who's obviously got some problems, and I'll say, people I meet socially that are very troubled, and I'll say, and they want to talk to me at a party about their problems. And I'm trying to say, you need to find a therapist, right? Yeah. Because this is a party or a wedding. And, I just want to be me here.
Who came to you for therapy at my wedding?
Who didn't?
You had absolutely lovely relatives. Lovely relatives. I loved everybody I met there. But yes, people who have more problems tend to be the most resistant to looking at psychology and to look deeper and to ever consider therapy. They're the people who say, I would never do that because I'm not crazy. Yeah. And so I think folks who say those things, I'm immediately suspect about what are they hiding and not looking at within themselves.
Might be so the closest to crazy are the ones who say that.
So since y'all brought it up, me doing my stat research. So here are the numbers. There are roughly about 200 maternal-driven filicides a year in the country. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty big number, more than I thought. And out of those 200, roughly 55% are psychosis-driven.
Yeah.
But it's even a smaller number of that about postpartum psychosis is driven even less than that. Yeah. About 4% they're saying out of that number. But at least out of psychosis driven, we're talking about 100 per year, 200 total mother-driven filicides. So the number's pretty high. So this case, it's getting all the attention, but that's the problem we actually do have in a mental health system, because that's still going on.
Yeah, very, very, very true.
Let me ask you this one, because I don't know that there's really truly an answer. And I've been trying to run this through my mind. All the folks who are going down the Patrick is evil route, and people are at different degrees on this. Either he's just narcissistic, or he did all this and he's whispering, sweet, horrible things into her ear, and he's the voice. Let's just say that obviously none of that is true, because it isn't true. And this is everything played out as it did. We're just playing with facts, playing on the reality plane here. He gets married 3 years later. I don't know when he started dating the woman. We don't have actual facts on that, and I'm not going to base it off of TikTok. What would be acceptable to society for Patrick in his life after this post tragedy? Is there any existence he could live out that these people who found reason to hate him would be satisfied with, other than, I don't know, living in a corner shaking? I don't know.
They'd want to see him suffering, constantly suffering.
He didn't do anything.
I agree, but it's just this non-rational anger. And, it's just like if he cries on the stand, if he were to cry, look at that. Look, he's manipulating. If he's more stoic and reserved on the stand, because that's a defense mechanism, people can compartmentalize. And, look, he doesn't even care. And it's mm-hmm. there's no
whatever,
way.
Whatever bias you want, it's coming in.
Yeah.
People are mad that he recovered some money, got some money through a GoFundMe that a friend of his set up after all this went down to help with the funeral costs. How dare him? And then they conflate those numbers and screw up with, and then they present him as something that they're not. I hope he makes a fucking $1 billion off of everybody who is calling him the killer here. I hope he fucking sues the living shit out of all of you. And Patrick, we have some lovely attorneys who are probably ready to help you if you need help. So feel free to reach out. We'll get you in touch. But holy shit. I mean, I'm all fine with everybody have opinions, but my God, this is just insane.
Yeah.
Utterly insane. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. All right. Siobhan's book. I do highly recommend going and checking this out. This is her memoir, Nightbird.
So go read this.
If you ever so many people love hearing you, Siobhan, and your insight into everything. If you want to know where all that comes from and her journey to here, this is the book. Go check it out wherever you get books.
And I highly recommend it on Audible, because Siobhan does an amazing job narrating it. I listened to it on Audible twice. It is a great, insightful listen, very aware, self-awareness. You hear a great journey, great solutions, and actually gives you great context. When you hear Siobhan on the show, you can actually see her world coming together with the great expertise she shares. So I can't highly recommend.
And then everything she researched about minds of mass killers, because holy shit, this is another good one. So go check out that book too. Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books. Go check it out, audiobook as well, and leave a review on Amazon. That'll wrap it up for today. For all of us, for Todd, for Siobhan, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. I'm going to go take a big, deep breath. We'll talk again real soon. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No